This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further, literally. They cover all things travel finance, like which travel cards are actually worth the annual fee and which just look shiny, how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships, when to book peak season trips without paying peak season prices, and more. So travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Today's episode packs something for everyone. We'll kick things off with a nugget for beginners, helping you avoid some of the most common mistakes people make with their points. Then, we'll go deeper with my guest, Robin Sachs-Frankel, who's written for Forbes, NerdWallet, and Bankrate for over a decade. She's sharing why the Hilton Aspire is her favorite premium card, the upgrades and perks that make it worth the fee, and how she used Hilton points for one of the most aspirational redemptions out there, Kalala Island in Nicaragua. If you've ever wondered how to use your Hilton points for something extraordinary, this conversation is going to give you both the fundamentals and the inspiration to make it happen.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. Friendly reminder before I introduce today's guest that for those that are watching this on YouTube, you can catch our audio only quick hits version of the up-to-date travel points and miles news every Friday that releases on all audio only platforms. And for those listening to this, you can watch the full video of this on our YouTube channel. And don't forget, we also do have our new Boldly Go Travels, more vlog style video channel on YouTube, which we link into our show notes, where you can catch actually the video of our travels, trips, drone footage, walkthroughs of hotel rooms, all of that fun stuff. But now I want to get on to today's guest. I'm super excited because we have someone who knows points and miles at a high level. She's a professional writer in the credit card and points and miles world. Welcome Robin Sachs-Frankel to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, DeAndre. I am super excited to chat with you about one of my favorite topics.
I am super excited to have you here. I know you were recommended back a few weeks ago by Ross Alcorn back in episode 89. It was a fantastic episode with him. And when he said, hey, you have someone I can introduce you to that's written for Forbes, for NerdWallet, for Bankrate, I was like, I 100% want her on the show. And I know you've written for all these different super reputable sources almost entirely on points and miles and credit cards. So, I mean, that is your specialty. That is your niche. And I'm really curious, before we unpack all the really cool things we're going to talk about today, which I'm super excited for the progression of today's conversation, how did you first get into this specific niche of journalism?
Yeah, it is pretty specific. I can't think of anything more specific than this that I've been doing for this length of time. So my background is I went to college and I got an undergraduate degree in economics and international relations. And I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with that. And I ended up finding a passion in business and economics journalism. So I have a master's degree specifically in business and economics journalism. And that could go in a lot of different directions. And you kind of, when you're young and you just finish school, you take a job. And fast forward a couple of years, I took a break from work, went back to work, and the job that I got was at Bankrate. And then when I first started at Bankrate, I was a financial products reporter, which means I was basically a generalist. And about 6 months into the job, meaning I was writing about mortgages or just bank news or whatever, and they weren't really covering credit cards at that time because they had a sister site called creditcards.com. And this was roughly 10 years ago when people started to realize how much money could be made in affiliate credit card writing. So they're like, we're going to start a credit card vertical. Robin, do you want to do it? And I'm like, okay. I knew almost nothing about credit cards. Literally, it was a method of payment. And all of a sudden, it was like this, not even just a light bulb went on over my head. It was like fireworks exploded. I was like, wait a second, this is going to help me do amazing things. And I just like fell in love with it as a topic and like leaned into it so hard. And it, I mean, it sounds silly, but it really did change my life writing about credit cards. It's learning how to leverage points and miles and welcome bonuses and all the other benefits that come with credit cards has allowed me to take trips that I never would have been necessarily bold enough to take before because they were expensive or it just seemed, I don't know, who does that? Like who takes their family there or that kind of thing? And I really just fell in love with it. I ended up, you know, with work, sometimes your journey takes you to different places and different businesses. So I went to NerdWallet after a time at Bankrate. And then I left NerdWallet and I ended up at Forbes Advisor about 6 months after they actually formed, which was really, really cool. And one of the reasons I ended up there is I followed the editor-in-chief who I'd worked with. Now she's the VP of content, but just an incredible human being. I truly think of her as a mentor, and I was so excited to work with her again at Forbes Advisor. And now I've been there 5.5 years, and what a journey it's been. I have covered other topics. I covered the Paycheck Protection Program for a while because there was certainly no Paycheck Protection Program reporter in existence until that program happened. I've covered mortgages. I've covered all kinds of financial news, but my specialty and my heart lies with credit cards and travel rewards because they really are one and the same. Obviously, there's credit cards that don't have travel rewards. There's secured cards. There's cards for building credit. There's student cards. There's 0% APR cards. So it's a broad field, but most of the time, credit cards and travel rewards are interlinked. And the more I write about it, the more I learn and the more cool trips I get to go on.
Yeah, and I absolutely love that because you still had a very similar start in a way that a lot of people have when it comes to points and miles, where they hear of something, they see something, and they're just like, holy crap, this is actually possible. Now, this was your career. Your career pushed you into this direction and opened up and kind of expanded this mindset for you, which is really cool. I think for a lot of people, it's they see a random blog post. They're finally like, you know, there's got to be a better use for my points. Their friend's been talking about it. They randomly came across my podcast, whatever it may be, right? And they've gotten their eyes opened, I should say. So it's really cool that it was similar, but from a work standpoint for you, that's allowed you to take some incredible trips. And I'm super excited because I know we're going to talk about a place that you really, really love, Kalala Island, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But I want to start as a progression a little bit before we even get there. And just start by asking, from your perspective as a journalist, what do you find that most beginners don't understand about points and miles?
So I think that most people don't understand that they are a currency that has different value depending on how you use it. I'm not talking about a cash back card or something like that, but a lot of people, for example, will have American Express membership rewards. It doesn't matter what card you have. That's the currency they collect. And they say, oh, I booked a trip and I did it through the Amex Travel and they planned everything for me and they helped me. And I got a great trip for my points. And that's wonderful. And that's great. You know, if anytime you can get something for less than you would have paid out of pocket, that's a win. But I think what they have a hard time understanding is that their points can be worth more than a penny each. Like that just, I don't know, people seem very stuck on that and then they get very overwhelmed. And that's fair because there is a leap to going from just a very simple redemption to understanding transferring to airline partners, right? Like that, you really have to want to understand that. And that's where I see most people getting stuck because that's not a slow progression. To me, that's a huge leap. Yet once you start understanding transfer partners, then there's a slow progression to understanding, you know, airline alliances and things like that. That's deeper. But just getting people to do like that first initial transfer, even if it's like to JetBlue for a domestic trip and get 1.2 cents per mile, I see that so much. Or people thinking that one card is the best card. Those are probably the two most common things I see people doing. Everyone's like, what's the best card? You write about cards. And I'm like, best card for me isn't the best card for you. So
That makes a lot of sense. So I would be curious, Robin, if someone approached you, emailed you, whatever it may be, and said, I have 50,000 or 100,000 Chase points or Amex points, and I have no idea how to start beyond the portal. You say don't use the portal. How would you kind of succinctly explain the basics? Because you mentioned transfer partners and JetBlue, and these are things that I think if someone day one is listening to this episode, they might be like, this is just so much information to take in, which 100% it absolutely is. Is there a way that you kind of simplify the basics? And I know we could do literally an entire episode on just the basics, but to keep it kind of short and sweet, what would you say?
So before Chase Ultimate Rewards changed the whole redemption strategy, I would have said that's an awesome place to start, even though I hate booking through an online travel agency. But just because the very thought that you could get 1.5 cents per point for everything, I think that really is very clear cut the value you get versus just cash back with Ultimate Rewards. So I'll give you an example. People ask me, you know, I had someone ask me today, oh, I have 211,000 membership rewards, and me and my family of four want to fly from Miami to Athens, June 4th, one-way business class. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, that's great. That's a ton of points. Good for you. But peak time, first of all, there's no direct flights from Miami to Athens, right? And this is peak time. Like, you're simply not going to get all four of you in business class, right? So I very gently explained that to her. I'm kind of veering off what you're asking me here. But what I would say to somebody is, think of a route, a direct route that you want to take, and what that airline is, right? Especially if you want to fly to Europe. If you want to fly from, I'm using Miami because someone else asked me this. If you want to use your points to fly from Miami to France, the only way to do it directly from here in Miami that's easy is Air France. So look up how many points are required on Air France to fly. And then if it's, you know, 100,000 points and you have 100,000 membership reward points, transfer the points. I'll walk you through it. You know, you got to set up a loyalty account with Air France, and then membership rewards makes it very easy. You slide a slider, how many points you want to transfer the points. It's usually instant. And, you know, people get very scared to do that. You know, it's like they see their money flying out and then they get worried something's going to happen. But you have to just take that leap and do it, and just don't be afraid. Because once you start doing it, it gets addictive, right? I mean, you know, like once you start using your points for free or almost free travel, because travel's never free, there's always taxes and fees and you have to pay to eat and various other things. But once you start elevating your travel life with points, you never want to go back.
I love that. And that makes so much sense. And I wanted to have that little brief segment because I know we're about to go a little bit deep into some topics, especially we're going to go pretty deep into the Hilton Aspire card here in a moment. But I wanted to have a starting point because I know in a lot of my episodes when I do deep dives in different subjects, for someone that's a beginner, that might be a little bit too much information for them that they don't necessarily need at that time. So I wanted to make sure we had some information in this episode that can be a great nugget for someone that may be new, or this is their first or second episode that they've ever heard when it comes to points and miles. Now, for my longtime listeners and longtime followers of people and people who have been in points and miles for a while, they're here for some knowledge. They want the meat and potatoes, and that was the appetizer. Now we want to get into the substance here. And I know one of your favorite cards is the Hilton Aspire. And there are a few cards out there like that. And I'm super excited because this is one of the ones I've mentioned on the show before. It's one of my next cards that I plan to get. If by the time this episode doesn't come out, I haven't gotten it already, because I had a game plan getting the Chase Business Reserve. Once I hit my sign-up bonus on that, the next one I'm moving to is the Hilton Aspire. So there's a few reasons for that, which I'll probably touch on as you talk through it. But I want to ask you, why is the Hilton Aspire your favorite?
Well, first, I want to touch on something you said at the beginning of that. What cards are like the Aspire? You're talking about like the Brilliant and other high-end hotel, premium hotel cards? Because to me, there's nothing like the Aspire. And the reason I say that is, yes, there's a lot of expensive premium hotel cards, but the Aspire is the only one that I'm aware of that gives you the highest level tier status. And that's diamond status in the Hilton program. Even the Bonvoy Brilliant gives you, I believe, platinum status. You know, but every other card that offers high status, it's either like one rung below the top, or in some cases, two rungs. Hilton gives you diamond status. And I'll say this for Hilton. They treat their Diamond members like diamonds. I mean, like I feel appreciated because I do spend a lot of money at Hilton now that I have this card and now that I'm loyal to Hilton Honors Points. The main thing that I love about this card is the diamond status. You know, it comes with a lot of other benefits that make it worth the $550 annual fee. But the diamond status, if I use it once a year to get upgraded to a huge suite, that's worth it to me. 90% of the time when I travel, I'm traveling with my husband and kids. I have teenagers. We are long past the day of two queen beds. But what I've been doing the last multiple trips I take, always staying at a Hilton property, I'll book the lowest room on points that you're allowed to fit four people in. And then I've always been upgraded to a bigger room. Even when I'm traveling by myself, if there's a bigger room to upgrade to, I get upgraded to it. And it's been phenomenal. So we went to Jamaica, we went to Tulum, went to Jamaica. We got upgraded to a massive suite. It had so much space. We were like, what do we do with all this room? I mean, it could have been two hotel rooms. And that was me booking it. It was Rose Hall. It's not a Hilton anymore. It's something else. But it was Rose Hall. And we booked, you know, 70,000 points a night, got the fifth night free. We get there and I'm like, we are never going to fit in this queen size room. And I'm like, excuse me, I'm a Diamond member. I went to the front desk. What can you do? And they upgraded us this massive room. We went to Mexico, to Tulum, and they upgraded us to a two-bedroom suite with two bathrooms. And I had booked the lowest level base room. I mean, it's just the value I've gotten is incredible. I mean, I never would have paid whatever that room was, $3,000 a night. I don't even know if it was bookable on points. So it's just, I look at it as I am spending $550 a year on the card, but I'm getting so much more value when I travel with my points because of the upgrades I get. And it absolutely elevates the experience for my family. We would be like sardines squished into a room with two queen beds. Now, would it be the worst trip ever? No, we're still away. We're still in another country. We're still doing cool stuff. But when you have an extra bathroom, it certainly is amazing when you're a party of four. And when you have a bed for everybody where the teenagers don't feel squished, that's another win. So for me, this card, I just love this card.
I love that breakdown, Robin, and the fact that it's been so valuable for you. I'm curious, outside of the platinum status that's gotten you these upgrades, can you walk us through some of the other benefits that give you the most real-world value outside of just the room upgrades?
Sure. So aside from the diamond status, which has been amazing, it comes with a $200 twice-a-year hotel and resort credit. Now, that's kind of tricky, which in theory, if I used it twice a year, that would be $400 in credit, which would be amazing. But it is a little tricky to use because it is a pretty short list relative to the number of properties that Hilton has that are eligible for those credits. But if you use it once a year, it's a win. I went to Marco Island, which I live in Florida, and so that's about 2 hours from me, with a whole bunch of friends and our kids. And the property I went to happened to be one of the properties on that list. So the rooms were pretty expensive. I never would have booked it, except I had $200 credit, right? And then somebody else gave me their Aspire to use because it makes them so mad. They had the Aspire credits and couldn't use it. So here I am, instead of paying like a net $600 for these two nights at Marco Island, I paid under $200 out of pocket. And I got upgraded to a massive suite. And because I'm a Diamond member, Hilton Gold and above get free food and beverage credit. That's another amazing benefit. So every day it's $15 per adult up to a maximum of two adults. So I got $30 a day food and beverage credit, which totally covered the overpriced bagels and coffee that we got at the cafe every day. You know, and my friends all spent a heck of a lot more money than me, had smaller rooms, and had to pay for their breakfast. And they saw the value of what I was doing. You know, they were like, oh, I want to do that. And I'm like, well, first thing you got to do is take your Amex Platinum card and register for Hilton Honors Gold. You know, like people don't. They're like, well, I have that benefit. I'm gold. I'm like, did you register for gold? No, I have to register. Like, ancillary to what I'm saying, when you had asked about like something about what beginners should know, the most important thing a beginner should know when they get their first travel card or their 100th travel card is make sure you understand each and every benefit. And if it's something you're going to use, sign up for it, opt in, click on it. You know, so many people have no idea of the stuff that comes with their card. They're like, I have lounge access with the Amex Platinum, for example. I hear that all the time. And I'm like, yeah, but you have so many other benefits too. You have a Walmart Plus credit. You can get free shipping. You might not even need Amazon Prime anymore, you know?
Absolutely. And some of those things are actually the reason why this card is on my radar. As you said, it's the only card that gives you top tier status, again, that I can also think about in this very moment. And for our honeymoon to Fiji here in a couple months, we're staying at an SLH property, and SLH is now owned by Hilton. And we got a room that we paid 100,000 points a night for. We got the fifth night free, so 400,000 points. Now, that was interesting because I actually bought those Hilton points for a different strategy. But now, that's a standard room. The next level room on points was like 430,000 points a night. So I'm super curious. I mean, I think the base standard room is probably going to be fantastic. But if I go in as a diamond, will I get an opportunity to get an upgrade? Now, I know you've never not had one. I hope the cards roll the same for me. But at the same time, regardless, I think the perks of being a diamond status member when you roll in, maybe there's one on the last couple of nights. Who knows what it could be? But I think that could be a huge incentive, which is why I also agree. I think that's a huge value. But aren't there some other perks like a free night certificate and some other things?
Yes. So it comes with one annual free night certificate after your first year of card ownership. You're not going to get that free night when you sign up for the card. You have to complete a full year of card membership. And that free night can be used anywhere. And that's like an insane value. Like if you're staying at a hotel that costs $3,000 a night, you can use that certificate and it covers it. I think there's like a handful of exceptions in the Maldives and one or two others, which is easily found on Google or whatever your search of choices, but it's good in most places. I actually used it in Kalile Island. I could go stay at the Waldorf Astoria one night in New York. That's supposed to be absolutely amazing. And I could use that certificate. And the other great thing about Hilton is when you book stuff with points, it covers taxes and fees. Not all programs do that. I mean, I don't know why people get so excited. I know people get excited about Hyatt. I'm not on the Hyatt train. I'm on the Hilton train and I'm just going to ride it until it dies because I've just been so happy with my experience as a Diamond Card member with using my points, with the benefits that come with it. But another benefit besides the free night certificate, which is very valuable, is it comes with a quarterly airfare credit of $50. I think those are the main, I mean, there's probably other benefits that people are more into. I'm sure there's travel insurances and things like that. I usually pay taxes and fees or a couple bucks on my Chase Sapphire Preferred because I really like the travel and trip insurances better through Chase than I do with American Express. But the main things are if you utilize those main benefits on the Aspire, if you utilize the free night, the diamond status, the biannual $200 credit, and the $50 quarterly airfare credit, you're coming out ahead of the annual fee. Now, that is some work, you know, but I mean, I like this kind of work. To me, it feels like I'm getting value. So it's worth it to me.
Absolutely. Now, do you find yourself, are you typically booking your Hilton bookings through Hilton Direct, or do you use some sort of other place where you can get multipliers on your points or whatever it may be for, well, you're probably using points in general, but if you were to use a credit card, would you still do Hilton Direct or do you try to go through another booking portal to do so?
No, I use Hilton Direct because I get, if I'm paying anything in cash, I'm getting such a high multiplier as a diamond member that like I have to go on a trip when I have to go on a trip for work, if I can stay at a Hilton and I can pay for it myself, I'll always pay for it in the Hilton because that trip could earn me a free night. You know, I get so many freaking points for being a diamond member. So I have a Marriott card too. I do the same thing with the Marriott card. I tend to book directly with everyone unless any co-branded card I hold, I will book that brand directly through the brand.
Perfect. That makes perfect sense. And they said that you're not on the Hyatt train. I will say I am on the Hyatt train as a Hyatt globalist. So I am really actually interested to compare to see kind of how top tier Hyatt globalist status compares with Hilton Diamond. Because from what I've heard from many travelers is that Hyatt globalist is kind of second to none in their treatment of globalist members. But I feel like a lot of people that I know that are in the points and miles world, there's probably a slight fewer majority, or I should say a minority, that have top tier Marriott, top tier Hilton, and top tier Hyatt status. Marriott, I don't really think anyone's really talking to too much, but really, I think I'm excited about the opportunity to compare, like, hey, what's my Hilton status look like versus my Hyatt? Now, Hyatt, I have to actively go after, right? That's 60 nights I got to go for, or I can use the fast track through American Airlines and do 20 nights in 90 days. So there's options, but there's work there. I do like the fact that Hilton is kind of just given to me. I just have to pay for it and it's just there. And of course, Hilton has a pretty substantial footprint with their properties. So I do think there's some opportunity to compare and contrast in the future. And that's probably going to make for a really great episode one day.
Yeah. I mean, I had Marriott Platinum for a year once because I happened to have, it worked out with that many nights and I had a personal card and a business card, which gave me 30 nights off the bat. And then I ended up having a 10-night stay somewhere. And then I just went out of my way to stay. I was like, let's see what Marriott Platinum got. Marriott Platinum got me nothing, really. I mean, it got me, I didn't get upgraded anywhere. I was just like, this is it. I don't know. I wasn't blown away by it. And I know I'm not alone in that. Maybe if I was like Lifetime Titanium or something, it would be different. My problem with Hyatt, it's not a problem with Hyatt. It's that it does take a lot of work to be globalist. They don't necessarily have hotels everywhere that I end up going. But I will say that the value for the points is insane. I mean, you know, Hilton points aren't worth that much. That's why I like turning these no lifetime language cards. Hyatt has a lot of value, but I just don't, you know, I pick a lane. I don't travel enough where I can simultaneously pursue both paths. It's just not worth it to me. I mean, and I travel a fair amount compared to the average person, but not compared to the average travel hacker.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. So I love that you gave us a perfect segue to talk through the no lifetime language offers. Can you explain a little bit about what that means? I know that's kind of broader to the Amex world, and the Hilton Aspire card is an Amex card, but can you talk through what it would look like or how it could be different for someone that's just going online to Amex and applying for it versus searching out the no lifetime language strategy?
Sure. Well, now it seems like the Chase Sapphire cards have lifetime language. So a no lifetime language offer, NLL, if anyone is on any kind of points and miles website and sees that abbreviation. Amex has a rule called once in a lifetime, which means that you can only earn the bonus on a specific credit card once in a lifetime. So you can only earn it on the traditional Amex Platinum once. You can only earn it on the Amex Gold Card personal card once. You can only earn it on the Amex Green Card once, and so on, right? So, you know, and sometimes people's needs change. You know, maybe you used a Platinum for a couple years and then it didn't serve your needs anymore and you closed it, but now it's, you know, 5 years later and you're like, well, you know, the Amex Platinum does fit my lifestyle and the way I travel. Well, it kind of stinks to sign up for a credit card and not get the bonus because that's a huge perk of getting any new credit card. But there are these offers called no lifetime language offers that kind of bypass that rule. I don't really understand how it works on the back end, but when they exist specifically for Hilton cards, I'm like all over it. I just signed up yesterday. They come and go, and you can find them on various websites that talk about points and miles, and you got to pounce on them quick because they go away pretty fast too. I don't know if someone like clues Amex into it. I don't really understand, and I'm just happy they exist. But yesterday I did sign up for an Amex no lifetime language offer again on the Aspire, and I was approved like instantly. And what's mind-boggling to me, and I know it happens, is that my credit's frozen at all three bureaus and I still got approved for the card. I've yet to get a notice from any of these bureaus that this card is even on my credit line. I mean, it must be once I start charging things on it, but so now I have two Aspires.
And so what's your strategy there? Can you kind of talk through why having two makes sense for you? Understandably, like with the business platinum or personal platinum, right? You're getting the influx of membership rewards points, and then you can kind of reuse a lot of those benefits over and over again. The airline, you know, $200, the fine hotels and resorts benefits. Like you can do a lot of those different things, but I mean, you can't really double dip as a single person on your status, your diamond, right? Like your diamond is just diamond, but what are the benefits you're finding with having an overlap? I'm sure there's going to be a cancellation strategy, but I'm curious, how have you found this to make sense for you?
So I mostly went for it because it had 185,000 points bonus and it gave you 6 months to earn it. It was $6,000 in 6 months. And I'm like $1,000, you know, $1,000 a month for 6 months is not that hard. I've teenage boys that can eat that in a week, right? But my strategy is actually to double dip, not with the diamond status, but with the $200 resort credit. I'm just going to go out of my way and stay at some really nice resorts, and I'll have $400 to put towards it. I use those credits either to bring down the total cost of something and go a place I wouldn't have gone otherwise. You know, there's a big difference between staying somewhere for, when I went to Marco Island, staying there for, I think it was like 180 out of pocket versus 600 out of pocket. I wouldn't have gone, you know, 180, that's an indulgence. I can take my kids and enjoy. But my husband and I, now that my kids are older, we're trying to go away once a year to a really cool, I'm trying to go away once a year to a really cool, nice place. He's just, he doesn't know about it until after I plan it. So now I'll have $400 to spend between January and July at some really cool resort. And then somewhere between July and December, I'll have another $400 to spend. And I'll have, instead of $200 a year total in airline incidental fee credits, I'll have $400 a year in airline incidental fee credits. And I have a strategy for those too. So I have lots of strategies. I plan on using the card strategically. Will I keep it more than 13 months? I don't know. You know, because it will be a lot of work to get maximum value out of two cards. But it'll be great for those 13 months. And I'll love having those points. And I'll have a lot of fun using those credits. I mean, when I was in Tulum, I used the $200 credit for the fanciest spa experience I've ever had in my entire life. And I never would have paid $200 for a spa. I just wouldn't have. You know, I'm like, oh, I can get a massage closer to home for cheaper if I need a massage. And it was unbelievable. I'm not even going to tell you about it. It was so good. You're just going to be jealous. You're going to want to do whatever I did on your honeymoon. I'll let you find that for yourself.
Perfect. I love that. Well, you just talked about, Robin, the fact that you get to have experiences that you never otherwise would have. And that is why this podcast is called Revolutionizing Your Journey, because points and miles allows people to revolutionize the way that they travel and to do travel differently, having experiences, going places that they never otherwise would have. So I want to use that to transition to another highlight, which I think has been, from our conversation before the show, one of your most memorable redemptions ever, which was in Kalala Island, which I know is in Nicaragua. So that is, I believe it's bookable with Hilton points as well. So can you tell us about that experience, your experience at this incredible, probably aspirational resort that a lot of people probably haven't heard of, but you might put on their radar with this conversation?
Yes. So this was probably the greatest redemption in terms of value per point that I've ever made and probably will ever make. And that's okay. I'm okay with peaking on that and having plenty of other experiences where I get 4 cents per point or whatever. So Kalala Island is a speck of a place about 2 hours off the coast of Managua, the capital of Nicaragua. And the only reason I knew about this place is from the points and miles community, because people there's so many different things you can read and so many different podcasts to listen to, although yours is clearly the greatest one.
Appreciate that.
There's so much out there, right? And I read a lot of it. I mean, it's literally my job to be informed, but also I'm committed. I'm into it, right? It's fun for me. And whenever I was reading about lists of aspirational properties to use points, Kalala Island came up repeatedly. And so I was like, wow, that sounds really cool. Someone I work with had actually gone to Kalala Island when it was owned by Hyatt. It was whatever small property group Hyatt was managing. I can't remember what it was. And anyway, it became an SLH and Hilton, or maybe it was an SLH, Small Luxury Hotels of the World. But Hilton took over from Hyatt. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, this sounds a little bit more attainable to me. This actually sounds like something I could do, because I had signed up for 2 Hilton cards with no lifetime language like a year ago. This trip was like a year in the making. It's not like you sign up for a card and you have an amazing trip tomorrow. There is some planning and thought and research. So what's so amazing from a points perspective about Kalala Island is rooms go for like $3,800 a night up to $5,000 and more a night. I mean, it's stupid expensive, but it's only 150,000 Hilton Honors points a night. So the value you're getting is like nuts. I can't do the math that fast in my head, but it's very high value and it's a pretty attainable thing to do. So I had a very complicated, I had 300,000 Hilton Honors points, plus I had a free night. So I was originally going to go for 3 nights. And then my friend who had gone said, you know what, it's a big journey to get there and back. You really should go a 4th night. So I actually bought $150,000 Hilton points for $750. And it was so worth it. So Kalala Island is a teeny tiny island with only 5 like huts. So you can, there's only a maximum of 10 guests at any time. It is all inclusive. And there's literally, I mean, we talk about unplugged. They don't even have internet. You communicate with the staff on WhatsApp. I mean, you can get, they have Wi-Fi, so you're not totally disconnected, but there's like no TV. There's no, you're not really like streaming movies or anything. It is the most peaceful. You know, your decision is, do I want to lay in a hammock or do I want to swim in the pool all day? I mean, and they cater to your every need. They will bring you a coconut with a straw in it in the water. Like, it's just, it's amazing. It's so beautiful. There were like sloths in the trees. And but getting there, so this is this peaceful, idyllic place, but getting there is really part of the experience because you fly to Managua. And then from Managua, the next morning at 4 a.m., you take a teeny, teeny, tiny plane that fits like 10 people. You can't even have a bag on your lap. It has to go on the back. And you fly in this teeny, tiny plane for an hour over the jungle. And you land at an airport that is definitely like a loose definition of an airport. And then you take a taxi through a town that is definitely not like most towns in America. You know, you're really in it. And then you get to this port, if you can call it a port, and it's all people in speedboats because that's how they get around from island to island. So you're in a speedboat. I don't mean like a James Bond speedboat. I mean, it basically looks like a canoe with a motor on the back. I mean, it was, my husband was ready to kill me. The boat freaked me out a little bit. I don't know why. I wasn't scared on the plane. But, and then you take an hour speedboat journey and you're just like this for an hour. And you're in the middle of nowhere. And it's, I mean, you're just like, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is insane. But then you pull up to this dock and there's staff playing guitar and greeting you each with a coconut with the name of the island etched into the side of the coconut. And you're like, you know, I mean, it was the most amazing thing. It was amazing.
I love that story because that's a lot of what it's like when you go to the Maldives, but take away 36 hours of travel, because especially if you go somewhere like the Park Hyatt in the Maldives, so you fly into Malé and, you know, you have to kind of figure out your time in Malé. Then you fly from Malé. This is a much larger plane, but fly from Malé to a regional airport. Now, the regional airport is a very tiny airport where like the guys are, they basically pull your luggage off by hand and like drag the luggage cart off like to where you're waiting by hand. So it's super small. Then you hop in a golf cart takes you to a port. Similarly, then you're on a 45 minute speedboat before you go to the beautiful and amazing Park Hyatt Maldives, where it's very similar. So I hear completely what you're saying, because these remote experiences, it takes a little bit of a sense of adventure to get there. But once you're there, you're like, holy crap, we're here.
Yeah, I mean, you almost have to have, I think, some of that adventure to appreciate. You have to have that journey to get there, for me anyway, because if I had just gone straight from Miami to this resort, you know, then I might as well have just gone to Cancun.
Right.
You know, it's not remote unless it's really hard to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let me ask you this. So with this resort, was this adults only? Was this family friendly? You know, what were the elements of the resort?
I don't think it's family friendly because there was nothing to do, like literally nothing to do. They didn't even have a gym. Like that's how, I don't want to say bare bones because it was super comfortable. My bed was comfy. The food was amazing. But you'd have to have a really little kid. Otherwise, I wouldn't have brought my teenagers there. They would have been bored to death. Like there's no, I mean, I guess I could have gone snorkeling. But you can't snorkel every day for 4 days, you know? This is like, you need to unplug. This is it. This is an unplugged trip. I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure if kids are allowed. I think they might be, but I think it would be a waste to go there with kids. I mean, they don't have a kiddie pool. It's just a pool. And it's a swim-up bar. You know, it's clearly designed for adults.
Got it. Well, for someone listening to this, who maybe they're looking to unplug, maybe they're saying, you know what? I want to get away. I would love a Maldives-esque experience without dealing with the 500,000 points I need to get me and my spouse to the Maldives and everything else that needs to be figured out with a journey like that. What's your advice on how to plan for it? I know you actually mentioned a little bit about buying points, and I have a full episode talking about why buying points and buying Hilton points are like the best and easiest points to possibly even buy. But kind of from a timing standpoint, I mean, is this something they have to look out like a year in advance? Like, how does that work?
Yes. So there's a lot of tools out there that can alert you to availability. I believe I used Roam, roame.me, and I paid $5 for a month to see what would happen. And I put in my availability because I was like, I really want to go, but I can only make it work in these dates in the summer when my kids aren't in school. And within like a week, I got notice that there was availability on the exact dates I wanted. And I'm like, this is a sign from above. Because it's such a good points value, it's really, really, really hard to find availability on points. And you have to book a minimum of 3 nights. So you're competing with all these other people. The chances of 3 nights in a row lining up when you want to go are pretty slim because there's only 5 rooms to book. So it just happened to be available. And then I should mention that within that 150,000 points a night, that covers your flight from Managua to Bluefields, which is a little airport, and your boat transfer and all your meals and alcohol while you're there. So it's insane. You know, we had to fly ourselves to Managua, but I did that through Avianca on points, and it was no big deal. And we stayed in a Best Western hotel literally across the street from the airport, which I can't say enough good things about because it's literally across the street from the airport, and the food was amazing. And it was very cheap, and we each used our $50 hotel credit through the Chase Sapphire Preferred. So it ended up being out of pocket, like $30 a night, each night. And it comes with a full massive breakfast, like the best breakfast ever.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, with your stay there, I mean, I know you said there's only 5 huts. It only supports like 10 couples. Was there an upgrade for Diamond status?
No, that's it. No, that's the upgrade. The room is a big, they're all suites. They're all literally right on the ocean. It's not like the Maldives where you're over the ocean. You're on perched on the shore and the ocean's like right there. Like, it's crazy. Like the waves kept us awake the first night because I'm not used to waves in my ear like that. It was very, then you immediately adjust and it's the most relaxing sound ever. But no, every room is like basically a suite. It's a big room, huge bathroom. You know, it's kind of open air, so there's no air conditioning, but you're never, because you're on the ocean, you're never hot. It's not buggy. There's a huge rainfall shower. The bathroom's kind of outdoor, indoor, a huge soaking tub. There's a couch and a car. It's a very relaxing place to hang. We would have a fruit plate delivered to the room every afternoon and whatever you want that they have. You know, if I had said, I want a steak at, you know, 2:47 in the afternoon, they would have brought me a steak. I mean, it was really cool. They have a little spa there. We didn't use the spa. We were pretty relaxed anyway. And my Hilton credits would not have worked there.
Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just incredible. I don't know. It's very rare. I haven't been to the Maldives yet, but it's very rare that you can go somewhere and there's like nothing to do but unplug. And it's totally beautiful. That's really something everyone should experience. Not necessarily in that way, but just instead of going somewhere and being full of activities and coming home and being a little tired but rejuvenated from the excitement, just coming home and being like, wow, life really slows down when you give yourself that chance to get away and do nothing.
I love that. Slow things down, take an opportunity to unwind and to disconnect. And Kalala Island sounds like a great opportunity in how to do that. Robin, as we start to wrap this episode up, we had a little bit of a progression, right? So we started first on just some basics and fundamentals of points and miles, evolve that to talking about the Hilton Aspire, and then transition to talking about a place that you can book with Hilton points and get a lot of benefits out of, which obviously the Diamond status wasn't something that you could really elevate there specifically, but you've had a huge amount of benefits with your Diamond status specifically. As we start to wrap up, I would love to kind of ask just a couple more questions. And one, going back to Hilton and the Aspire card in general, and this maybe is from your journalism side a little bit, but what would you say would be the biggest misconception that you think people have about Hilton points or the Aspire card? Something along those lines.
I mean, I don't know about misconceptions about the Aspire card. Most loyalty programs, as more and more people have gotten smart about points, most loyalty programs are slowly devaluing what your points are for. You know, like a hotel that you could book once a couple years ago at 70,000 a night, it's now 100,000 a night, right? So Hilton, people say that the cash value of a Hilton Honors point is around 0.74 cents per point. That's roughly where most people estimate it to be worth. So, you know, if you're looking to stay at like an Embassy suite somewhere, it's probably not the best value for your points. But if you're looking to do something truly extraordinary, like those SLH hotels with Hilton, those are incredible values because those are really, really expensive hotels that I wouldn't stay at otherwise. I'm a journalist. I'm not rich, right? So I'm rich in points, or I will be once I meet this Aspire bonus. But it just to have experiences that you didn't think were within reach, Hilton points have gotten me there. Other points have gotten me other experiences too. But I would say in terms of the actual lodging experience, I've had the best luck with Hilton. Other hotel points have gotten me to places where I've been able to do things in those places that were super cool because I had a place to lay my head. But I would say the nicest hotels I've stayed at on points have been through the Hilton program. I love a good all-inclusive. I think that's such an amazing points value. because I travel with my family. I know people don't like all-inclusives and that's not for them, but I'm like, that's just our base. You know, I'm not just staying at the all-inclusive and doing nothing. When we were in Tulum, we went and did this whole thing where we went down this lazy river that was carved naturally through mangroves. We saw pyramids and all kinds of things. When we went to the all-inclusive in Jamaica, we took, I mean, this is out of pocket, but we took a trip deep into the mountains and went in some river that's supposed to have spiritual powers. I mean, we like left the resort, you know, the resort is just a place to be well-fed and comfortable. Emphasis on well-fed. I have two teenage boys, as I've mentioned. I mean, food is like huge for us, but I don't know. I mean, maybe Hilton should hire me as a spokesperson. If you're listening, Hilton, I love you. I've just had such a good run with it. You know, like why, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Let me ask you this. I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball here, but I want to hear what your response is going to be on the fly. So let's just say I've got the opportunity to transfer 100,000 of my Amex points, right? And I can get the 2-for-1 benefit with transferring from Amex to Hilton. Or let's just say financially for me, money is not an option. I could buy 200,000 Hilton points. So basically I'm buying 100,000 Hilton points and getting another 100,000 as a bonus. Let's just say, what would you say I should do?
In that case, if money's no object, use your Amex points for premium airfare and do not transfer them to Hilton.
Perfect. Why is that?
Because in general, you get the best value from transferring your points, whether they're from Citi or Amex or Chase, for premium airfare. Not so much for coach. You usually get like between 1.2 and 1.4 cents in value for an economy flight, but sometimes you can get close to 2 cents, every now and then even more, when you transfer your points from a transferable credit card rewards program to an airline for a premium flight. By premium flight, I don't even mean premium economy. I mean like business class, first class. Those tend to be sweet spots.
And I love that you said that. I wanted to leave the listeners with that because while we often talk about, as you said, nearly free travel and using the benefits from your cards and the points that you earn, someone this whole time could be listening thinking, oh, well, I don't need a ton of Hilton points because I have a ton of Amex points. But I think the value, when it makes sense, and I encourage you to go back to listen to that episode 84 with Tommy Lonergan, who he talks about buying points, he really unpacks the details of why buying can make sense to preserve your transferable points. So as you said, Robin, you can transfer to these airlines where you can get Qatar Q Suites, you can get some really high-end experiences in the air, and it can make mathematical sense to just buy your points instead, especially for the hotels, when it makes sense. There's a timing aspect, there's a lot of things that go into it, but I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to make sure to clarify that there are other options as opposed to just having to buy Hilton points. You can transfer, but it can also make a lot more sense to buy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just going back to the Kalal Island example, if I bought one night's worth of points when they had, you have to do it when they're offering a points bonus. So for $750, I was able to buy 150,000 points, which was enough for one night at Kalala. That means I paid $750 for one night, which the regular cash price was like over $4,000. I mean, wouldn't you rather pay $750 instead of over $4,000? But then again, you have to A, want to spend that kind of money, period, and B, well, that's really just A. You just have to be willing to spend any money to have that kind of experience. And there, for some people, they aren't. And that's okay, too. But if you do want to try these elevated experiences, there's ways to cut the costs.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Robin. Where can the listeners follow you, follow your writing, your travels, all that fun stuff?
Sure. Well, they can find me on LinkedIn, Robin Sachs Frankel. I post a lot on LinkedIn. That's really my favorite place to be these days. Or you can just follow my author page on Forbes Advisor, Robin Sachs Frankel. That's pretty much how to find me.
Perfect. We'll link to both of those in the show notes. And Robin, last two questions before we wrap this one up. First off is, who else should we have next on the show? I know you were recommended by Ross. This was a fantastic conversation and deep dive onto the Hilton Aspire and then a great way to use your Hilton points. Who else should we have on the show?
Sure. I mean, I have so many people that you could talk to. I could give you like 15 different people. I would say Caroline Lupini would be a great person to talk to. She's a digital nomad and has been traveling for 11 years on points and miles all over the world.
Wow.
Full-time digital nomad, not just like home base 6 months and then keeps going. I would also talk to Dia Adams. She is a longtime points and miles hacker, and she always has a very unique perspective and a slightly different way of doing things than most people, which is cool. I think she would be terrific to talk to. I mean, I could give you 30 people because I find everybody who's in this hobby that I know to be super interesting, and their backstories I love and how they got into it. I'm probably the most boring backstory. I got into it for work.
Well, perfect. We'll work to connect with them and have them on a future episode. They both sound super interesting. Robin, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
No, this was really fun for me to talk about. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been fantastic having you on the show. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your stories, a little bit of your wisdom, even providing a nice little touch there for some of the beginners as well. And I know, as I said, Hilton Aspire is on my radar to get, and you kept it on there. I was already sold, but you made sure I was extra sold. So I appreciate you being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. For listeners out there, be sure to follow Robin and her Forbes Advisor page. She's an amazing writer, so you'll get a lot of value out of her because she talks more than just points and miles. She talks about regular credit cards, secured credit cards, really some basics in there that could be really valuable also if you have, you know, teenagers that are about to go into college. They're trying to figure out, you know, a good place to start just to create some financial stability for themselves before they get into points and miles. She's a lot of great avenues there. And I know that she likes reaching out to financial advisors to get good sources as well to make sure that her info is backed up properly. And if you enjoyed this episode today, be sure to follow us on all social media channels. As always, sign up for our newsletter, our private Facebook group as well. We have an active membership chat there within the Facebook group. And as always, don't forget to like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, do all the things, and we will catch you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Travel doesn't just happen when you get on a plane. I'm Pauline Frommer, and on the Frommer's Travel Show, we explore not just where to go, but how to bring travel into your everyday life through books, shows, and stories that shift your perspective, plus insights on smart destinations, timely trends, and interviews with the people shaping the way we explore. Find us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or voyescape.com.